Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. We met these two lovely women, Toni Lazzoni and Susan Jones, at Fountain Grove Lodge, and we had a wonderful time meeting them. Our friends Matil and Joni introduced us, and we thought they would be very special to be on our radio show tonight.
Yes, we did. And welcome to Living Proof, both of you. Hello, hello, hello. Let's hear your voices.
Hello, hello, hello.
That's Susan.
Hello, hello, hello.
And that was Toni. Toni loves to sing. We love it. So Susan Jones, you were chief of police of Healdsburg for a while, since 2001 or 2002 through 2010, yeah?
Yeah, July 2010, I retired.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you were also in the military?
I was for 3 years in the Air Force.
So we have lots of questions to ask you about that. Those are typically not areas that women really go into quite readily. So we have a lot of questions for you on that, on those two things, amongst other things, I'm sure.
Okay.
And Toni, you were a lawyer?
Yes.
And almost a nun.
Almost.
Almost a nun. And so we have tons of questions for you as well. I can't wait to get into your stories, both of you. We look very, very forward to hearing them. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of September 3rd, 2017. Same-sex couples in the country of Malta can begin marrying starting this Friday. Changes to the law were enacted by Parliament last July and approved by an overwhelming majority. The changes proposed by the government to the Marriage Act replaced references in the law to mother or father with parent and a husband or wife with the word spouse. And in the country of Chile, President Michelle Bachelet introduced a bill to legalize same-sex marriage. It's the latest in a series of recent reforms in a country long regarded as one of Latin America's most socially conservative. Bachelet signed the proposal, which will be sent to lawmakers at a ceremony in the presidential palace. She said the measure seeks to expand the definition of marriage between a man and a woman, and would also expand rights for gay couples, allowing them to adopt children. She said, quote, "We can't let old prejudices be stronger than love," end quote. Chile approved civil unions for same-sex couples in 2015 and decriminalized gay sex in 1999. The bill comes a week after Chile's constitutional court upheld a measure that would end the country's absolute ban on abortions. It's unlikely Bachelet will be able to push the measure through Congress before she ends her term in March of 2018, but LGBT rights advocates celebrated the decision as an important step forward. And here in the U.S., in the state of Illinois, Governor Bruce Rauner signed a bill into law last week banning the gay panic and trans panic defense in murder cases, making Illinois the second state to do so after California. The law prevents people in the state from claiming the murder victim was gay or bisexual and made a sexual advance that caused them to react violently, or that the victim's gender identity caused the same. The American Bar Association has also come out against gay and trans panic defenses and urged local, state, and federal governments to pass legislation banning it. The governor also signed a bill into law making it easier for transgender and intersex individuals to change the gender marker on their birth certificate. Those wishing to change their gender marker will no longer be required to submit a sworn affidavit from a physician confirming gender reassignment surgery. Instead, the law now only requires a physician to state clinically appropriate treatment has been provided. And last week, President Trump signed an executive order banning transgender people from serving in the United States military. But this week, his Defense Secretary James Mattis put that order on hold. According to USA Today, Mattis put the order on hold until a study by experts on the matter could be completed. And here locally, Positive Images, Sonoma County's LGBT youth organization, invites members of the LGBTQ community to its LGBTQ Summit. It's happening on Saturday, September 16th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Sonoma State University. The day will include a variety of speakers and a lunch. You can get reservations and learn more at lgbtqsummit.com. And don't forget Art for Life, the annual benefit for face-to-face here in Sonoma County, is coming up on the same day, Saturday, September 16th, starting at 2 p.m. This annual favorite features local art, food, and wine. You can learn more at ftf.org. For a calendar of LGBTQ events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for the latest LGBT news, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and we're in studio this evening with Susan Jones and her wife, Toni Lissoni. Welcome back, everybody. So good to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and Sheridan mentioned earlier about that you're married and that you've been together for how long?
24 years this coming Saturday.
Yeah. Ooh. We call that a long-term relationship. Yeah.
24 years.
Congratulations.
Wow. Thank you.
Nice.
And this coming Saturday, what are y'all going to do to celebrate?
We were just talking about that. Actually, we're the actual day, we're just going to be hanging out at the lodge, but on Sunday, we're going to Single Thread with three of our friends from the lodge.
What Single Thread?
Yeah, what is that?
What is Single Thread?
Oh, sorry, we don't know.
It's one of the newer restaurants in Healdsburg. Oh. It went into the old post office lot. It's a new building, but it's over on the corner of, I should know this, Center and Plaza. Wonderful restaurant.
Wow.
So fabulous.
Putting a plug in for them.
Yeah. It's not a restaurant you just walk into.
No.
And it's, I have to admit that it does kind of toy with my, a little bit with my sense of guilt, but because it is kind of expensive, but it's, you don't do it often. You do it for really special occasions, and it's beautiful celebration of food.
Yes.
Mm. Sounds lovely.
Yeah, specialty. What kind of food is it?
It's Japanese influence, but it's all locally sourced and locally grown by the people who actually own the restaurant and cook the food.
Hmm. It's just a beautiful event.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a lovely celebration for you for 24 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. So, yeah, we get back into your relationship. I'm just wanting the audience to know more about you. So what is there else that we didn't mention? We know about the nuns, we know about the military. What, any other topics that we can cover later?
Well, the only thing that I would add is that the area of law that I practiced was civil rights. Mm. And that was quite interesting because I did so in the field of workplace harassment and discrimination. And most of the people that I had the privilege to represent were female police officers.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh.
That is so interesting.
And that is not how we met.
I was going to say, is there some connection there? Wow, powerful. Thank you. We really wanted to touch on that. What about you, Susan? Any other extras that we don't know about you that
She plays the saxophone.
Oh.
Okay. There's that. There's
musician.
That.
Musician.
And
she paints now, too.
And I paint now. Yeah, too.
Two.
And I love animals.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Wow.
Four-legged guy.
And I know that you do jewelry making.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, cool. So, wonderful. So, yeah, let's jump into the civil rights movement and your work around helping. So you're an activist in a sense.
Well, I guess so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's I think it's a real privilege to be able to be an activist as your job.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people who sacrifice a lot for justice do so without any kind of pay or remuneration. They just do it because they're committed. And I was lucky enough to have the two things come together for me in my life. So I don't know if there's any better reward than doing well for doing good. Mm. You know, that doesn't come together all that often. When it does, it's a real blessing. Mm. And so I feel really blessed to have been able to work in that field. And the way it happened really for me was that Susan needed somebody to teach diversity training for police officers in California with her following the Rodney King beating. Mm-hmm. So, Susan, go ahead and talk about that a little bit. I think the
California Peace Officers Standards and Training required a 3-day workshop, 24 hours of diversity training for all police officers after the Rodney King event. So several of us who were officers or sergeants were sent to train the trainer course, and then were deployed out to various academies to teach. And it's really, because it's so emotionally charged topic, it's much easier to team teach it with someone. And Toni was, she taught the same thing in high school when she was a high school teacher, which is another part of her background. Yeah. And so we teamed up and really had a great time doing it. It was a great time.
Were you together?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it was really funny because we would get our student evaluation forms back, and it was really amazing how many people put on the form that the instructors had such good chemistry together.
Beautiful.
Yeah, because we never came out in class. But we wear very similar wedding rings. So every now and then you'd see someone look at our hands and then look back at us and just do the nod, like, I get it.
Yeah. Well, we thought that it would be better not to come out because we had a segment that we taught on sexuality per se. And we thought we wanted people to be free to say whatever they felt like saying so that we could dig into real things rather than have them want to be polite or be afraid that if they said anything negative, that it would be offensive to us. So we felt that, and I think it was a good decision. You know, what we really wanted to hear and what we really wanted to deal with were prejudices, not just, you know, getting people to either stay silent or not in agreement with us. And I think those were some of the most exhausting days that we've spent together, and the most rewarding at the same time. Mm-hmm. We have some experiences from those days of training that will, I'm sure, stay with us forever. There were some really amazing moments in
class.
Give
transformations.
Yeah, can you give us one that comes to the top of your head? A transformation moment or amazing time? Or
well, one of the things that we did, I'll start with the actually least emotional one, but actually an aha thing for people. I told Susan when we first started teaching, you know, we're introducing ourselves to the class. You introduce yourself as, at the time, the police sergeant from Concord Police Department. And I introduce myself as, you know, a civil rights attorney. Well, you know, right away, people have some set ideas and prejudices, basically, about who's what and why and, you know, what we're going to be like. And I told Susan, even when the class members would ask legal questions and I would answer them, they would then look at Susan to see if she was going to nod in agreement that, yes, yeah, what she said was right, mm-hmm. or if they were going to just, you know, not believe me. So I noticed this, and I told her after the first time we taught, And she said, oh, at first she said, Tony, I think you're being a little too sensitive. I said, oh, wait, I have an idea. I said, next time we teach this, let's trade identities. So the first 45 minutes of the class, they're going to think that you're the lawyer and I'm the police sergeant. And then see what happens.
And she was absolutely right.
Well, how did you know? What did you see?
I would talk about legal issues, and they all looked at her, what they thought was the police sergeant, mm-hmm. and waited for her to verify what I was saying was true. And it was amazing.
And the first segment was all about stereotyping. And we asked them, did they think they stereotyped? And every single one of them said no. They absolutely did not. So, and they were frankly annoyed that they had to take this class and 24 hours of this they're going to have to take when they're not prejudiced at all. And people accuse them falsely of these things and blah, blah, blah. So we went through what stereotyping is, how come we all do it. It's the way our brains work. And we talked about, you know, the way your brain categorizes information so that you can, you know, have it there and then learn new things because you already know some things, and that sometimes that leads to stereotyping. Often it does. And that you have to think consciously in order not to automatically fall in. And that's like an automatic reflex was what we were teaching them in the first 45 minutes. And then when they came back from the break, we told them, oh, by the way, we lied to you in the first 45 minutes. She said, yeah, she's the lawyer. I'm the cop.
Yeah. And then? Uh-huh. And they wouldn't believe us. So, you know, we got into a good discussion over that, and then we passed around our identification.
They ID'd us.
So I had to show my badge and ID card, and I said, come on, you guys. Do I really look like a Tony Lissoni? She's Italian. She looks Italian. I'm Caucasian. I'm Scandinavian.
She's
kind of
the white girl.
I'm Welsh. Yeah, right. I'm Welsh.
You know? Oh, wow. But, what a teaching, though.
But yeah, it was really great because they all sat there then dumbfounded. You know, we said, oh, right. Oh, sorry, but you don't stereotype. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then we did a lot of things
that's the best kind of teaching, right? Oh, yeah. I want to applaud you.
We did a lot of things like that. And actually, at the end of the 24 hours, they wanted to keep going. And that, you know, that was really
every
great.
Night at the end of every class, they invited us to go with them to have beers. Mm. And we did. And at the end of the class, we made the class almost like a retreat. And by the end of the class, they were taking pictures of us with them, and they made a big collage
yeah.
of pictures of everybody in the class, and it was a really amazing experience. So we went from, you know, people that sat there sometimes with those robo glasses on, you know, with their sunglasses in the classroom, you know, kicking back in the chair and arms crossed in front of them, to then at the end, you know, just some in tears. I mean, it just, mm-hmm. yeah. And the people that said, you know, that's fine. I'm here. I have to stay here to get my, you know, little card punched, but I'm not saying anything. And we'd always laugh and go, oh, right. Yes, you will.
Right. Okay.
Once the walls melt away, right?
Yeah, and we always did it with a really heavy dose of humor. The last thing we wanted people to do was feel bad about having flaws that every human being has, you know? And we wanted, really, the message we wanted to get out there was, look, what we need to do is see each other as people. And we did another exercise that it'll take too long, but I'll tell you about it offline, where we gave them, we brought in a sack of potatoes and had them each pick out a potato and study the potato for like 3 minutes without being able to mark it in any way. We threw them all back and we said, find your potato. They all found their potatoes, their own potato, really quickly. And we said, wow, so you thought all potatoes were alike, I bet. Now, if you can give a potato 3 minutes of your time and look at the potato to find the uniqueness in the potato, how about a human being?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That was great.
That's brilliant.
It was fun. It was fun. It really challenged us to be creative. And then Susan at one point went into a Sam Kinison routine just spontaneously. This one day.
We had a student who was being a little mouthy in the front row. And I don't know what happened. I just channeled Sam Kinison and started yelling at him and got right in his face. And I was saying really funny things.
Like?
You're stupid. You're never gonna amount to anything. The only reason you're in here is because... I don't even remember half of it. It just came to me. The whole class was howling. And when I finished,
he was laughing so hard.
And after that, he was great. I lost my voice, but he was great.
Wow. Wonderful. Wow, fun. I appreciate the work you were doing there. And I could tell, you know, I can feel the energy in you, inside you, how important that work was
it
to
was.
You.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. It was easy to go from there to doing strictly civil rights stuff. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So, okay. So, yeah. So, Susan, can you give us a little bit more history about you becoming chief of police in Hillsborough, you know, right? Our neighbor town.
I know. Who would have thought? Well, I started my career at the Kern County Sheriff's Department in Bakersfield. I was a deputy down there for 5 years and knew I wanted to get out of Bakersfield. So I started coming up here and met someone, not Tony, it was BT before Tony, but I met someone and moved up here and went to work for the Concord Police Department. And I was there for 17 years, learning being a police officer and a sergeant and doing a whole bunch of fun things. And I was a district commander at the time. I worked my way up through the ranks via a lawsuit that Tony was one of the attorneys on. And then Hillsborough was looking for a chief, and I applied and got the job. So the rest is history.
And I will brag on her a little bit.
Please do.
There were 62 applicants for the job, 4 of whom were sitting police chiefs. And Susan was the only applicant that was rated #1, the first choice in all of the panels that they had put together to interview the candidates. So I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty grand.
It was nice, and I have to give a shout out to the city manager Chet Weistepik, because he didn't let the fact that I had sued my previous employer stand in the way, where a lot of people would. And when I told him that, when he realized what had happened, when he was doing my background, I said, yeah, you know, I'm afraid that might make a difference for you. And he said, no, actually, that is the reason I want you, because you won't put up with this kind of behavior, sexual harassment behavior in your own agency. Mm. So
for anybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, stand up for yourself. You're going to stand up for everybody.
Yeah, right.
So I have 2 questions. I'm curious how you even thought about becoming a police officer. 1, and then 2, your experience being a police officer. What do you think you offered to the community as a sergeant, as a chief? You know,
it was never anything that I thought about doing. I had gone into the Air Force. I was in Bakersfield. I wanted out of Bakersfield. So I was looking at a variety of occupations. One of them was veterinary medicine, but my grades weren't good enough for a scholarship, and there were some programs that I could have partaken in, but I didn't want to live in Alabama for 12 years. So so I decided to go a different route, and I joined the Air Force and went in as a medical service specialist, which is like an LVN. Got trained to do that. Didn't really like that. Too many sick people. So when I got out, I worked for a couple of physicians in their clinics, and then I took a job as a musical instrument technician, which popped up, and I learned how to repair woodwinds, and I love that. I learned how to play them all. And then I knew I needed to make a job or have a job where I made a better living, and the Kern County Sheriff's Department was hiring, and I had friends who were security police in the Air Force, and it looked like fun, so I applied and got hired when they sent me through the academy. At the time, that was only 12 weeks. Now it's 24, 26, and that's what launched my career. As far as how what I brought to the profession, I think for me, a kindness that isn't always present in some officers, where I have empathy for people who have messed up, because I was somewhat of a juvenile delinquent myself. And kind of a more calmer approach, which seems to be very common with women. I know on my early evaluations, I was told that I took too long dealing with people's problems. I tried to find a solution. I should just get in, take the report, and get out. And that all flew in the face of community policing. Once we started the community policing routine, then it became take time with people, find out what the root of the problem is so we can get rid of that and not have to go back to the same situation. So I would like to think that women really brought that forward and still do. But that's what I feel like I brought. As far as a supervisor and a chief, it's just, for me, especially as a chief, was creating an organization that was fun to work for. Fun to be at for your daily shift. So that if the officers are having a good time and they're relaxed and they don't feel like management's after them or their supervisors are after them, mm-hmm. then they can go out and have that same calm, relaxed, and happy approach with the community. Mm-hmm. So that's what I felt like I brought.
One more little bragging thing.
She does it. She's the president of my fan club.
Gotta have
yes,
one.
I am. When Susan first got hired, the police department had the worst attendance rate in the state because there were a couple of people, one in particular, who was allowed to sort of rule the roost. The chief kind of just let him kind of lord himself over people, and people would come drive up to the parking lot, see his car there,
and
just
home
say,
sick.
Forget it, I'm not going to go in today, and go home sick. So the other, the bragging I'm doing is that by the time she left, it had the best attendance in the state.
I had to force people to take vacation.
Wow.
I had to force people to stay home sick. They'd come in sick, and I'd say, go home.
Yeah. Hats off to you, girl.
Yeah. And,
respect. That's respect.
Thank you. Right.
There was only one person there with a college degree, and Susan said, if you want to promote up the ranks, you're going to have to go to school. By the time you left, I think all but one
right.
had college degrees.
Oh, yeah. That's so
Masters,
cool.
too.
That's so wonderful. You've really helped affect
those people's lives. And not only are they going to go out into the community and be a better police officer, they're going to be a better parent.
Exactly.
And partner to their families.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
This is a really good time to take a music break.
Okay.
So would you, either one of you, like to introduce the song and why it's your song?
Well, I think it's both our song. We saw her perform this on
the Grammys.
On the Grammys. Kacey Musgraves. Follow Your Arrow. And it's just, it says it all. It just says it all.
Well, let's take a listen.
Okay.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof. I'm Sheridan, and I'm here with Diana, and we are in studio with Susan Jones and Tony Lissoni, and they've been talking about things they've done in their past before they retired, and now they're living in a life of bliss at Fountain Grove Lodge. No, they're not. Yes, they
Yes.
And so we just have some questions a little bit about your youth. And when did you know you were a lesbian? And how did you meet each other? So kind of going into your personal lives a little bit. So Tony, would you mind starting? Like how did you know you liked girls? And when did you know? And all that stuff.
Actually, I was pretty clueless about myself for a long time. I mean, I actually married a guy right out of college. And I just wondered why this just didn't feel right. And then I left him for my maid of honor.
Oh. There goes a book. That's or it. A movie.
So, yeah, I was being teased by friends that my life up until that point seemed like a title for a Jerry Springer show. Like, if your ex almost nun wife left you for her maid of honor, call 1-800-JERRY. But, you know, I should have had clues because, and there certainly were the clues there. I hung out with the boys when I was a little kid. Because I thought the stuff girls did was really boring. You know, I didn't want to play with dolls and, you know, sit in the house and coloring books or whatever. I wanted to be on my bike and, you know, or jumping on my trampoline or, you know, just doing things outside and fun things and adventurous things that boys like to do. And so, but I also have a best friend that I've had since I was 2 years old that we're still in contact with each other. And she's like a sister to me. And we also had a really great relationship, but I would usually hang out as much with her brother as I did with her, just because he did more fun things, you know. But let's see. I think another thing was that I did like boys so much because, you know, we were friends. And so I had crushes on boys, too, growing up, you know. And I loved women, but I never thought in terms of, like, having a crush. I just thought that you didn't. You know, you never heard of girls having crushes on girls, so, you know, it was...
So you didn't see any of that around in your neighborhood community?
Not in the neighborhood at all. I grew up in a barrio right outside of downtown L.A. And culturally, it was Catholic and Latino. And it had been Italian neighborhood, Italian and Irish, German-Irish. But then, you know, as demographics changed, when my mom and dad grew up there. But then when I grew up there, it was probably 96% or so Mexican-American. And the culture stayed pretty, you know, like closed, I guess. But I had really good friends that were close friends that were women, close friends that were guys. And then I started, you know, reading things about sexuality and stuff like that. But everything that was said back then was so ridiculous. I guess the mainstream idea at that time, you would know this more than I do, but the mainstream idea at the time in psychology seemed that everything went back to, like, if you had a domineering mother and a, like, a very subservient father, then, you know, the guy, that's the why. Kid could be, is going to turn out gay, either a gay son or a lesbian daughter. And my parents were so great and so much fun, and their relationship was so equal and healthy that I thought, well, there's no way I could be any of this. You know, I mean, it's just not true. So that combined with the religious stuff about, you know, the Catholic Church condemning it and saying that, you know, it meant that you were not being living in, you know, part of the image of God, blah, 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 the complementarity between male and female and all this stuff that was so, like, terribly, like, you know, now we know that sexuality and even our physicality, it's all on a spectrum okay, back then it was you were this or you're that, and that's it. You have, you know, this choice or that choice, and it's clear cut. So it was literally, for me, unthinkable in the sense that I could not think of myself in those terms because it just wasn't in my mind in any way possible. So I got all through, and I wasn't sexually active. I was so involved in so many other things, and I found life in general so exciting in other ways that I wasn't, you know, that sexual when I was that age. So then when I went to college, I had my first sexual experience with a woman, and I thought it was just, well, people do that, you know, people experiment. Susan's laughing. She told me, oh, my God, Tony, really, you're so, like, dumb. You didn't get that?
Could come up with a nicer word.
I can't remember what you said.
That's
stupid.
That's how you felt.
That's how you felt.
Stupid. But, you know.
I want to ask you how it was.
The experience, unfortunately, was with a person that wasn't very nice. Oh. And so it was not that, it wasn't a good experience. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess I could have been scared straight.
I mean, right? Yeah. Exactly. That's what, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
but eventually you got it because you're here.
Yeah, eventually I got it.
So when was that turning point?
The turning point actually was having to get married to a man and, like, going, God, people like sex? You know, I don't get it. You know, it was just like... And I didn't want to be like that because, you know, I kind of forced myself to do whatever I could because I loved him as a person too, you know. But and I thought to myself, well, I don't get what people see in each other and the sexual thing. But, you know, in my own mind, I'm thinking, I like him so much as a person. This is probably as good as it gets, you know. Plus, you know, you hear women in the older generation. They used to complain. Now, I don't know if this was just a cover or what, but used to complain about having to have sex with their husbands, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I was thinking, well, I guess that's how it is, you know? And then the woman who was my maid of honor that for whom I left him had been in love with me and went off to Europe for like 3 months and wrote a journal about it. And I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know any of that. But obviously we're close friends. And she came back from Europe and had me read her journal. And I was just like floored. I was like in tears, feeling so bad that she had to stand next to me and marry me off to somebody else when she was in love with me at the time. And I loved her dearly as well. But I thought, you know, there was no category in my brain to be in love with her. And as soon as there was, and that's what did it. It didn't take me a day. And I was just, okay, my marriage has to end. And we have to be together.
It kind of like made sense.
Yeah. It completely made sense because that was the first time I'd had a sexual experience with somebody that I was in love with. And then I got it. It's like, oh, I get sex now.
Susan's smiling.
I get it. Oh, wow, this is kind of nice, you know.
But so, yeah. So once you came out and you got with your best friend, or what? How did your family take it? What?
You know, like I said earlier, I had the best parents. I mean. They were wonderful. They had me late in their marriage, and they wanted kids. My mom had a couple miscarriages, and so when I came along, I was like their little prize. And but they didn't make me into a spoiled only child brat. You know, they both were very open to. They had friends all across the spectrum. My mom was a hairdresser. She had so many gay men friends. And it wasn't like she knew them, but they didn't come to the house. You know what I mean? It was like we really had everybody in and out of our house, all colors, all, you know, beliefs, all, you know, just, and they took it completely naturally. You know, I don't think they had a clue either. I mean, let me put it this way. I think they had the same clues I had. But, you know, whatever was going to be was going to be. But I had never the least a bit doubt, least doubt in my mind that they loved me, who I was, who I am, you know. So I was very, very lucky. And I didn't go through the hell that kids go through when they know early, especially in high school when, you know, I dated guys, you know, but it was never serious, you know, so I just had fun. So I think I was really lucky in that respect. I listened to my cousin that you interviewed, my cousin Ray Lynn, and this was the first time listening to her interview with you that I knew what hell she went through being bullied the way she was in high school. Because she quote unquote looked gay, you know, she looked like the stereotype, and I never have. So I didn't go through that. And so I don't have that, you know, hurt as a kid the way a kid gets hurt. So I was pretty much able to take care of myself when I finally knew who I was or am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks so much for sharing. Yeah.
Susan, so the question is, how did you know, how old were you when you knew you were a lesbian? And how did you come out? And how did your family take it, et cetera?
I was in high school. I dated boys. Because everyone did, and you were kind of expected to. But they were guys I liked, and it was nothing super serious. But I also noticed I was very attracted to women. Not the girls in high school, but usually older women.
Like the teachers?
Teachers, yeah.
Like your PE teacher?
The young teachers. No, not necessarily my PE teacher, but. Yeah, the younger teachers. Not all of them, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to do with it. Unlike Tony, I didn't have the religious issue. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the curiosity to study it. So I just accepted that I'm gay and I'm going to have to learn how to deal with it, figure it out. Because I didn't know anyone else.
So you came to that conclusion in high school?
In high school, yeah. So part of the reason, truthfully, for going into the Air Force was to come out and meet someone, which I didn't do. I dated guys when I was in the Air Force because they tell you, you'll get booted out of the Air Force if you are found to be gay. So I stayed in the closet.
Did you know other women who were in the closet as well?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you all were in the closet together and wouldn't talk to each other about it?
That's correct. Yes. Mm.
That's a lonely existence.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a crowded closet.
It's a crowded, yeah. Should have had a party.
So you left the Air Force and came out? Or
I left the Air Force, came home, and I was 21 and I met someone. A woman, and had my first experience and realized that's exactly, you know, I am definitely gay. And we were an item for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I told my mom, and my mom and dad split when I was two, so he wasn't in the picture, but I told my mom, and she didn't take it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't talk for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. She didn't like the person I was with. I told my dad, I got to meet my dad again also. There was a period of time where I didn't know who he was. And I called him just to really meet him because he's my father and I wanted to know who he was. And after I got to know him, I think about 6 or 8 months later, I told them I was gay and he didn't care. He was fine with it.
Mm.
And my mom eventually came around. She really loved Tony.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, we got on very well.
Yeah.
That's great.
We
don't have that much time left in our interview, so I'd like to know the story of how you both met each other.
My ex introduced us.
Isn't that how lesbians create family?
Yeah, right?
Was she your ex at the time?
She was. Oh, yes. She was my ex at the time. I can do a brief story. She, we were together about 8 years. She met someone, fell in love, and we ended the relationship. And she went to a dinner party where Tony was with her ex. And then, if you remember the Bay Area Career Women,
B-A-R-C.
Yes. What was the thing? Putting on the Ritz the night before
the gay parade at the Galleria.
We called it the lesbian prom because everybody dressed up and it was fun. It was live music. We bought my friend and I bought tickets to go, and you got tickets. You can tell how, but anyway, I showed up just before it ended. I showed up around 10 or 10:30. I met Tony, and it was an instant attraction. And my partner had actually pushed me over to meet her. Hmm. My ex-partner, sorry. And we exchanged numbers, and Tony said she was not going to call me, so I had to call her. So I put it off for like 2 or 3 weeks because I was afraid to call her because I figured I was nowhere in her league. She seemed so intelligent. She was so beautiful, and I thought, you know, what chance do I have? A sergeant with the Concord Police Department.
And I was so angry that when I met her, I instantly liked her. And I thought she was absolutely adorable, beautiful. And I'm like, no, because I just, after that, the last relationship I was in, I just wanted to buy a dog and live happily ever after. I was like, no more. And then I met Susan that night, and I was like, no, I like her so much. But we had vowed to each other when we first started getting to know each other, we're just going to be friends, okay? Let's be friends.
Let's not mess it up with a bunch of crazy relationship stuff. Let's go to the movies together and go out to eat together and just go on hikes or whatever. But
nice.
We don't need the rest of that.
Yeah, because I said I was going to buy a dog and live happily ever after. And she said, good, then I'll live down the street from you and I'll be the crazy cat lady.
That was a good start to a relationship. Yeah. You're both funny. Yeah. That's nice. Wow.
Yeah.
So this is cool. So you have any secrets of staying together for 24 years that you want to offer, share?
You got to be best friends.
Oh. Mm.
You have to be friends first. Mm. You have to love each other.
And, you know, it's so funny. I embarrass Susan because I brag about her. She embarrasses me because she brags about me when we talk to other people about each other. And that's, I think, a function of the fact that we have never competed with each other. And I think that some of the worst problems we've ever seen in people that would otherwise, I think, get along just fine is that there's competition in the relationship. And we just have never had that. Instead of competing with each other, we're like each other's promoter or something, you know, and it's natural for us. So it's just a gift that we have.
That's what it should
beautiful.
Be.
Teammates. Yeah, we try and be supportive of each other like that. I love that. So, wow, times have flown by, and we just love having you. I love the energy. I love how I feel in here with you, too. You're just special people.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work that you've done.
Oh, thanks.
And I was thinking that we always ask our guests to give advice to the audience about life or whatever you feel important. And I was thinking maybe you can be creative and, like, sing those words out to the public. We have never done that before. I love that one, Diana. That's like creative.
Follow your arrow wherever it points.
Points. Sorry. Goes points.
How does that go? Love who you love. La, da, da, da. I don't. Yeah. I wish I had the lyrics.
That's beautiful.
That's
beautiful. The song we played earlier.
Yeah, I wish I had the lyrics in front of me, but they're great. Yeah, that song's good advice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true.
The only song we've practiced together is Going to the Chapel.
Oh, yeah.
Want to go for it?
Sure. Spring is here, the sun will shine, whoa, I'll be hers and she'll be mine. We'll love until the end of time, and we'll never be lonely anymore, because we're going to the chapel and we're gonna get married, going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gee, I really love you, and we're gonna get married, going to the chapel of love. Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. Love it. Thank y'all for your courage.
We want everyone to remember that, like Susan and Tony, you can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. Sing your joy.
Yes.
Like them, you too can be visible and vibrant in telling your story. And this is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
Spring is here, the sun will shine, whoa, I'll be hers and she'll be mine. We'll love until the end of time, and we'll never be lonely anymore, because we're going to the chapel and we're gonna get married, going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gee, I really love you, and we're gonna get married, going to the chapel of love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah. Love it.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Russian River Jazz and Blues Festival, Saturday, September 9th and Sunday, September 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tower of Power, Richard Elliott and Norman Brown, Lenny Williams, and more. Tickets and info are available at RussianRiverFestivals.com. You're listening to Radio 91, 91.1 KRCBFM Windsor, and 90.9 K215CQ Santa Rosa. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Open Space District is next.